it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Rosenblum.
We suck, so your self-quarantine doesn't have to.
Mark Grody.
I think there will be lasting derivatives of this once we get through it, and hopefully we will, with minimal damage, that people will be more aware, honestly, of washing their hands. And
good thing.
And apparently wiping.
They suck, so you don't have to.
They can do what they have to do. They know what they have to do. Now they don't have any problem getting it done.
Founding members of the WB Club.
Wake and bake. Come on.
Where's Toby?
So I'm practicing, you know, social distancing, and I have a few tips for everybody, you know. You know, no sharing pipes or joints. Things like that.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote,
stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
I also know that we suck right now, as bad as you can be.
Rosenblum, Mark Grody, Saturday suckage, the perfect day to talk about the Cubs. And Mark Grody over there, did you notice we had a new voice added to the Saturday suckage chorus? Did you notice that?
I noticed intro? It, but I don't know that. It sounded like Rick Hahn. Who was it? It can't be Rick Hahn.
No, he would not be saying that.
No.
Maybe Jed should, if you're talking local, Jed should be saying that. But Mike Rankin, our producer du jour, who has a cultural chasm.
We're going to go there right away.
Cultural zeitgeist.
Yep.
Yeah, why don't you just play that again, Mike Rankin?
I also know that we suck right now.
Doesn't that sound like Rick Hahn? Am I crazy? I mean, I know it's not.
But it's
it does sound like
Rick Hahn. Manager in a baseball, of a Major League Baseball team. It would be Brian Cashman. Brian Cashman.
Oh,
that's
oh wow.
Yankees general manager.
How about that?
Yeah, he joined. I mean, we got a pretty. We're gaining all sorts of Saturday suckage voices with the likes of Brian Cashman,
the socially disconnected producer.
Yeah, and Mike Tomlin.
I also know that we suck right now, as bad as you can be.
Yeah, that's Brian Cashman. We have Mike Tomlin.
As bad as you can be. Now I'm curious about what's going on with them Yankees, and the Yankees are 41-39, 9.5 back in the American League East. What does that make the Cubs then at 42-40, 7.5 back in the very average National League Central? Well, maybe they're not average because Milwaukee's pretty damn good all of a sudden.
Well, it makes them a good topic for Saturday suckage. We have much to do on Saturday suckage. So much going on.
Yeah.
But that's a good place to start. The Cubs, here's Chicago baseball, and it couldn't be more striking and more telling. The Cubs are 7.5 games behind the aforementioned Brewers. That is the biggest gap between first and second place in any major league division. The White Sox, meanwhile, are 6 games better than the Cleveland Indians. That there is the biggest lead that in the AL. Biggest lead in the AL, 6 games over Cleveland. That's your division lead, the biggest division lead. So both teams have had, you know, had to endure injuries and lost critical players. You got one team showing its depth and its smarts and its organizational commitment and resilience top to bottom. And then you have the Cubs. Where's your stars? Where's your depth? Where's your system? Where's your organizational progress?
I also know that we suck right now.
Yeah, there you go. and here's what you're looking at. You're looking at a Cubs team that is foundering around. You'd almost think this was the playoffs. They suck so bad. Right. And if you heard Jed Hoyer yesterday, he was talking about he was optimistic when they sucked, when they lost the lead in June, when they had a great May and started off June okay against a tough schedule, and then they just went right in the toilet, and they're still there with seven straight losses. He criticized the offense because they weren't producing late in the game. We said, you can't have your bullpen be perfect every night. It's not going to happen. And he still likes their bullpen, and that's fine. And then he talked about one thing I thought we were doing at the end. One hopeful sign was that we were taking walks. They go into Cincinnati. They lose 2-1. They do nothing late. They do nothing at all, almost. They walk twice. Two walks. And here's what's making things even worse. They're one player with a B-hack on their team. The one guy who can adjust,
mm-hmm.
right?
In first base.
Yeah, Rizzo.
Yeah.
Well, according to Sahad of Sharma, over his last 14 games, which covers 51 plate appearances, Anthony Rizzo has 17 strikeouts. That there is a 33.3% strikeout rate. His strikeout rate for the season is still strong at 15.4%. But Sahadov could only find one 14-game stretch since 2013 that equals or exceeds the K percentage, and it happened in 2014. The one guy with a B-hack, the one guy who usually gets out of this, is sucking worse than ever. All they do is strike out. They're back to every old habit. You watch this. What? It's like they've learned nothing. Like they've adjusted to nothing.
It's well put. And one of the things that you mentioned was playoff mode. And this is Cubs playoff mode, because they actually, last night anyway, received good pitching. Alec Mills was very good. Struck out nine. Millsy with nine strikeouts to one walk over a strong 5 2/3. But the Cubs weren't hitting. And here's the worst part about it. The Reds have a terrible bullpen. One of the worst, like if you just go by ERA, they are the worst. And the Cubs were beaten essentially by five bullpeners by the Cincinnati Reds. And you could handle that from a good team or an average bullpen, but that was not the case. And that is exactly, not necessarily bullpens beating them in the postseason, but the kind of excruciating lack of bats that we've seen since 2017 in games that count. That's exactly what happened last night. And even the Cubs bad moment for everybody last night when, you know, David Ross comes out, takes out Alec Mills, puts in Adam Morgan. Morgan allows a two-run double to Joey Votto, and essentially there's your ball game last night. So, yeah, I mean, you just circle last night's game, and that is the pain that the Cubs and the Cubs fans have dealt with for 3 years.
And that is a salient point. If you've seen this for 3 years, if you've seen, okay, it's a high fastball, they can't hit it and can't lay off it. It's like what Gina Davis said about Lori Petty in A League of Their Own. You know, high heat, can't lay off it, can't catch up to it. And the Cubs are suckers for that every time. You can give them this. They bought into launch angle no matter where the pitch is. They've yet to adjust. They've yet to learn. They've yet to show any ability to play any other baseball except slug. That's it. And you've seen it year after. How many years past that World Series are we, by the way? Do the math for me.
Well, that'd be 5 years, because that was 2016. Did I do that right?
17, 18, 19, 20, 21. Yeah, that's five. As many fingers as I'm holding up, which also
did I do
looks
good?
Like, yeah, you did good. You did good. Count Grody. So I could hold that up and use it as a stop sign to the Heisman. Why do you want to keep any of these guys around? What have they shown you? They've shown you a World Series. They brought you a World Series. For that, they'll be heroes. and forever. And certainly people who are part of the lore, the legendary breaking of that horrible streak, the worst in major league sports. The point is, why should any of them be untradeable? You can have all the favorites you want. Stop being a Cub fan who loved all the favorites of the choking 69 Cubs. Huh. They had Hall of Famers. They had guys who were wonderful. They were great people. They were great players to watch. It was great fun, and they choked, and they lost. Here you have guys who changed the calculus. This is now a prism by which you evaluate players who could win. These guys, have found ways to get worse every year, fall one tier short since that World Series. And every time they've gotten to the playoffs or gotten to a wild card game or any kind of playoff game, they suck. Nobody hits. They don't do it. And now you've reached another point. Before, you used to be able to feel good. Jed Hoyer feels good about his bullpen. I can't knock that. Craig Kimbrell is the greatest trade bait out there. The Braves and Jays are looking for pitching, and there you go. That's where he should go. But the starting pitching now, they quit on the season when they traded Darvish, and then they bring back Jake Arrieta. So I'll present you this choice. And remember, death is not an option, Mark.
Yes.
Jake Arrieta staying in the rotation, or the Cubs having zero idea who'd replace him. Do you know how bad Jake Arrieta is?
Tell me.
Okay, I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah.
He has a minus 1.5 WAR, according to...
I knew that. What else you got?
All right. Well, that means he's cost the Cubs a game and a half. He's worse than any replacement pitcher by a game and a half. John Lester, who's been bad, he's at minus 0.6, so he's almost a full game better than Arrieta while sucking his own damn self. And you are dealing with a team, an organization, organizational failure from the pitcher himself. Remember when the Cubs did say, and Jake did say, they know me, and the Cubs said, we know him, we can make this work, we can get him better. Well, he's gotten worse. He's gotten worse each day of the season, it seems like. So there's the pitcher, the pitching coach, the manager, the general manager, the organizational failure that you have to keep him there because you have nobody better than a player who's cost you a game and a half. You're telling me you don't have an average replacement player, a 0.0 player, Mr. Blutarski. This is an organizational failure and embarrassment. And he represents where this team is following the ownership quitting on the season by making the general manager get rid of Darvish. If you've got another way of looking at it, share it with me. If you want to be positive about it, share it with me.
I can't be positive about it, but I can tell you who I think is going to start in his place next time around. I think it's going to be Cole Stewart.
Drop into that voice?
Well, Stewart, it's like Beavis and Butthead meets the Californians. The Californians skit.
Oh, the Californians.
Stewart, I took the, I don't know, what are the highways in California? You know that better than I do, Stevie Sumption.
San Diego Freeway or the 405. Everybody likes numbers. The 405 to the 405 to the 710, or you can take the 101. Take the 134 to the 101. You can take it to the 5. You can take it to the 5, the 405.
But Stewart has returned to the real Cubs. He pitched 4 scoreless, hitless innings and struck out 3 in his only minor league outing after, you know, rehabbing from an injury. So I think, I believe that I have, this is just my guess, but I am solving the mystery of, for David Ross, of, hey, who do we replace him with? So I believe that he will be the guy. But you are spot on. The Jake Arrieta thing, it's like, you know, when we used to do the whole Jim Hendry thing. The whole, like, yeah, why not? Yeah, win the division, sure.
We might win.
Right, yeah, why, what the heck? I like that. Thanks.
Yeah, hey, that's a possibility. Somebody
right,
has
but,
to.
But Jake Arrieta is kind of that. You want to sign Jake Arrieta? Yeah, why not? Yeah, let's sign Jake Arrieta. What the hell? Bring him back. It'll be fun. And the idea, too, that this puts Jed Hoyer in a tough situation. It does, because I don't believe that he wanted to trade Yu Darvish, because there were enough reports and inferences that that was a salary dump, and I've never heard that wholly denied. But the idea of, well, this is one of your greatest Cubs ever, and how do you just let this guy go or DFA him? It seems heartless. The Cubs already let Jake Arrieta go once. They already made their decision on Jake Arrieta once, and that's when they let him sign with Philadelphia and decided to go with Yu Darvish, which ultimately maybe was a good decision. But in terms of the sentimental value, they did this already. We've done the thanks, Jake. Goodbye, Jake. Oh, you're back, Jake. You know, like it's not like we would do another round of it. I promise you. Like, if Jake Arrieta decides to retire, or if he's DFA'd or traded or whatever, we're all gonna do the, you know, the sentimental tweets, and, you know, maybe I'll put a picture up of Jake Arrieta from 2016. But we've done this already. We did it already. So in terms of the dealing with the nostalgia and the legacy, been there, done that. So now it's time to get a little heartless.
It is. You have to. Yeah, I mean, nobody is. The only barometer by which these players should be kept is whether they contribute to the next Cubs championship. And they don't look like any of them can or want to, capable. They don't seem to be able to adjust. So you can hold on to your, you know, your pet Cubs all you want, but that's all you will have. You won't have any kind of Met. You'll have the 85 Bears is what you'll have, one and done. He's Mark Grody. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. We're broadcasting from the Score Hyundai Studios, presented by your local Hyundai dealers. And our show this week, coming up after our break here, we're going to talk with a guy who should be producing us, but he's not here. Trash Panda is doing something I did not know he was allowed to do legally or in anybody's mind that this was a good thing. We will talk.
He better not be field dressing. If he's field dressing an animal, I'm out.
Yeah. All right. He's not field dressing. That much I know. Okay. At noon, Rick Camp will join us. Again, another former producer, but he is... He and Jay Zawoski are celebrating the 100th episode of the I'm Fat podcast. And one of the things we need to know, this is the 4th of July weekend. So what happens on Coney Island on the 4th of July itself, Mark Grody? You know? And Nathan's
famous. What was that?
Nathan's famous hot dog eating.
Oh,
contest.
Yeah.
Well, that's we're right. There's a competitive eating couple the Tribune wrote about from Naperville that looks nothing like a competitive eating couple. He looks like a model, and she could too. And they have a little dog named Wiener, naturally. So they have a Wiener dog, I should say, not named Wiener. So we'll talk to him about that. On the 100th episode, they have quite the burger and pizza all, not Jake Burger, we'll talk about him too, but a burger that the I'm Fat podcast has put together. And then at 1:00, so we got to talk trades of the Cubs. We got to see who they're going to get rid of, and we got to talk acquisitions about the White Sox. So we're going to talk to Bob Nightingale. He is a Odyssey Radio insider, and insider calls are presented by BetQL. Mm. BetQL is here to help us all make better bets through real, proven analytics. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. But first, we're going to visit with Trash Panda, because he's been, this is, I didn't believe it was happening. I still can't believe it's happening that he's missing this show for that reason. But we may be able to gin up a side hustle for him since, Saturday Suckage. We have the power to do that. So we'll discuss that after this, next on Chicago Sports Radio. This is Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to, Brian Catchman. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I also know that we suck right now, as bad as you can be.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
And then yes. Lee Elia.
Elia. Come on, look. Me.
Trash Panda.
Wow. Trash Panda's got his favorite superhero music coming in. Welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde, Saturday Suckage, which is usually produced by Trash Panda. But as we find in going to the Scores Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, Trash Panda, known by some as Adam Studzinski, is actually doing something I didn't think he was capable of, nor do I think he should ever do again, but he is. And Trash Panda, tell everyone, share with the class, the true fact of why you're not producing this show and where you are and what you're about to do.
Well, in reality, guys, I didn't want to produce this week because the show sucks. And
nice.
One of my best friends from college, and actually, two of my best friends, they're both friends of mine, are getting married today, and they asked me to be the officiant. So I am marrying two individuals, one of my best friends and his lovely fiance to be wife today.
Don't you have to have a license to do that? Did you have to go to school for that?
Yeah, exactly what I said.
It was actually, guys, shockingly easy to get the right to marry people. I went on the internet, and
Jesus,
the Universal Life Church is what it's called, gave me the rights to marry people. It was super easy. Unbelievably easy, actually.
This is why the divorce rate is so high. Is this what's going on in this country? Is this the way it works now? Anybody can get married, and anybody can marry them.
I just marry the people. It's up to them if they stay together.
Well, yeah.
Imagine a couple becoming lawfully wedded by a trash panda. I have to say this. Saturday Suckage continues to deliver quality content. We delivered World Series rings and now wedding rings, right? We did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, so, you know what? I'll still take mine 10 out of 10 times. Actually, let's open that up to the texters. Real sidebar. Would you rather have a Cubs World Series ring right now or the wedding ring you're wearing right now? And don't worry, you'll be anonymous on our show. Carry on.
It's the wedding ring as officiated and presented by Trash Panda. That's the charm. That's the Saturday Suckage thing. 206 texter. Oh, my God. He's an ordained field dresser. So have you done, is this your first wedding?
This is the first time I'm actually marrying someone yet.
So you had said earlier there are only, you can do whatever you want, but there are only two mandatory things, right? What are they? What do you have to do what's mandatory?
So the only things that have to happen in order for the marriage to be legal are they have to take each other. So like when they ask at the wedding, like, oh, do you take whoever to be your wife, and do you take whoever to be your husband? That has to happen. So they have to be like willing and voluntary participants, basically. And then the only other thing is me pronouncing them man and wife. So really, like, all of the ceremony at every wedding you've ever been to, I didn't even know this until I figured out what I have to do for the wedding. Everything except for those two things is complete hogwash. It doesn't need to happen. Every ceremony can be 2 minutes long. But
it's not hogwash. It's the choice of the bride and groom and how they want to. Choice
of that.
I don't know.
I pressed the wrong button on my phone. My bad, guys.
Is that your song?
What
is happening right now?
All of a sudden, I thought we were getting music.
And I wasn't even near the. I thought it was me.
Welcome to Saturday Suckage, Mike Greg.
I pressed the wrong button on my phone, and it put you guys on hold on my phone.
Why do you have a button for that song?
I don't. I don't know. I don't know what you. What I didn't know that happens. I don't know what was. I don't know. I didn't hear anything other than.
Look, if you hey, if you're gonna be marrying people, you need to get your bleep together, trash man.
Hey, I have everything together for the ceremony. It's this segment that I apparently don't have everything together for.
Yeah, well, par for the course. Par for the course, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now everybody has heard why Trash Panda is a producer of Saturday Suckage on a fairly regular basis. And he'll be back Monday when we have our suckathon. It'll be 5 hours from 7 a.m. till noon. And he'll be back in time with stories to regale us about the wedding. And I do think so. You would say anything the bride and groom asked you to say as part of your they could recite their own vows, but you would say anything that they asked you to say. So if the groom said, I want you to say, turn to the bride and say, and or turn to the groom and say, and you lucky bastard, do you take this moment? So you would say that.
Yeah, I might even say that today, actually. I mean, my friend definitely outkicked his coverage. So,
wow. That'd be good, because you want that on the wedding video. You want the videographer to just choke on that.
That would be pretty funny.
Mother of the bride. She'd appreciate that, too. Does she have pearls she can clutch?
Grody asked if I get paid. No, I'm not getting paid. Part of my present to them is me doing the wedding, is what I decided. And we also got them a nice gift as well. So.
Okay.
So, no, I'm not getting paid.
So, can we use this as a platform to get you a side hustle?
If people want to reach out to me and want me to marry them, then I'm willing to do it.
Well, look,
for
young
a monetary
getting...
fee. The friend fee is free, but if I don't know you, we're going to have to talk to you.
Okay, but a young couple being married by a trash panda, they'd certainly have a story to tell. And what about older couples wanting to renew their vows with the young happening trash panda, do it in trash panda style? And he would offer, group field dressing as part of the reception. Instead of doing the Macarena or the something like that, then he could do field dress. Everybody get out there with their field dressing gear on and bring knives and stuff like that. That's really good.
Everyone bring your own bars. Dead animal. That sounds like a fun wedding.
Well, so where
are,
is this?
What, Minister Trash Panda.
Yeah, he is.
Minister, Reverend, whatever. Yeah.
The Right Reverend Trash Panda. So what have they, are you allowed to tell us what the bride and groom have asked you to say? What will be part of your, or have you, besides say, they, turning to your friend and saying, and you lucky bastard,
they actually didn't give me anything that I have to say. I mean, they wrote their own vows, so I didn't have to take care of that part at all. So I came up with, a nice opening speech about them. And that's pretty much, a nice story or two that I'm going to fit in there. And that's pretty much it. I mean, they didn't give me anything. They had enough other, weddings are busy enough without having to worry about telling me what to do. Like, as long as they end up married and I don't stumble over myself up there, it should be fine.
Will the Trash Panda parents be in effect, and how do they feel about you marrying somebody?
I mean, they're not gonna be here. They know the couple. I think they've maybe met them once, but no, they weren't on the invite list. But I mean, I told them that I'm marrying these two, and they didn't have any objections. They seem to think I'm responsible enough. I don't know why.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's because sweet put upon Alice is too worried about making sure that Shooter isn't hitting anything but a trash panda out the window. So I think she's got other things on her mind.
Yeah, she's got enough to worry about.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to having you regale us with stories in the wedding post-game show. See how you did as the officiant. And I might suggest that you drop in a mention of a website, trashpandamarriesyou.com kind of thing, in your presentation today when you're up there and you got the bully pulpits, as it were. And
I got to go make sure that URL is available.
I would do that. Hurry, because I think some of the people are rushing to do that.
Someone's gonna swoop it up.
All right. Well, good luck on that, and thanks for showing up for part of Saturday on Saturday Suckage, Trash Panda.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anytime, guys.
All right.
See you, bud.
That's Trash Panda. Adam Studzinski is gonna. I was knocked over when I heard that he's performing. He's officiating.
That's amazing.
A wedding, Mark. That's just,
this is good to have in our back pocket, though, because, you know, if you or I meet a lovely lady and we just want to get things rolling really quickly, just be like, hey, Trash Panda, is it possible next Thursday you could perform an efficiency for us?
How about during the 11:40 commercial break? Can you do that, Trash Panda?
Yeah. How long does this actually take?
He could, right? based on what he said. If we had any sense of a female person, it doesn't even need to be female. If you and I were to get married, we'd be in the studio and he'd be on the other side. He said all we'd have to do is be there voluntarily, not be forced, not a shotgun wedding, and he'd legally declare us man and wife. That's all needs to happen.
That would be amazing. Let's think about that.
We could have Trash Panda marry people in studio.
Oh my God. This could open up an entirely new thing at the score.
Or renew their vows, yeah. Trash Panda marries you. And a 773 texter.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Trash Panda prompted this from the 773 texter, wondering, will he be dressed as a panda? That would be so great. Because he's licensed whether he's costumed or not. Right? We have to remember, I'm going to write this down to make sure we ask him on Monday when we do the 5-hour suckathon.
Yeah, he better book a lot of guests that day. You know, it's on him, because if he doesn't book a lot of guests, he's got to listen to us for 5 hours. So that's on him.
By the way, can I offer a tease to Monday?
Yeah.
If I might, on our suckathon?
Yeah, man.
So you were sitting in case people missed it, what I heard, I know we're going to do what Mark heard later, but what I heard this week was Mark Grody sitting in with David Hall
on Friday. Yesterday.
For Molly, yeah. And somehow it came up, I think it was in transition, but discussion of country music and stuff like that, right? You guys were discussing music.
Yeah. David Haw's a big country music fan, yes.
Right. So there's something that struck me, something from my distant past that struck me, that I will bring to the program that hopefully will provide much mirth and jocularity and interest, and it involves one of the best known sports teams ever. And it recalls a different era. So I will bring that Monday.
That's awesome. Yeah, Haw was a big time country music jock back in the day in a small town. But he was it, man. He was, you know, rolling country records. And now I'm trying to get him in at US 99, like have him do like a Saturday shift. And it sounds like he is shunning that so far because, you know, he's got the whole Monday through Friday thing and doesn't really feel like he needs to work on a Saturday. But his roots are in country, you know.
But
so
he works on
time.
A Saturday. He's got Bruce. He's got Woodrow.
Well,
okay?
I guess he doesn't want two shows on a Saturday. He doesn't want a Saturday morning and a Saturday night. But, you know, it's just something I learned about David, and it's time to, we need to exploit his even more talents that he apparently has, and it's time to get those out there.
What would he say if we made him choose, if the choice, and remember, death is not an option, Chris Stapleton or Bruce Levine? That's how you spend your Saturday.
I go Chris Stapleton.
Yeah, me too. I saw him open for Petty. And yeah, oh yeah.
He's good. Yeah. He kind of rocks, you know. Like, I'm starting to like country a little bit, and it's because of guys like Chris Stapleton, because he just kind of rocks.
Yeah, well, it is severe. It is heavy stuff. It is.
Yeah.
He's emptying the magazine when he plays, and I loved that when I heard it. I'd never heard him before.
No doubt.
You heard him live, I'm like, whoo. So, yeah. Anyways, we were discussing the horrible, embarrassing Cubs, who are an embarrassment top to bottom. Let's talk about the other team in town that is an organizational success. And one kid after another just keeps coming back. And we're going to bring that to you. And guess what? It's only July 3rd. But the quote of the year, a quote of the month is already over. The voting's done. It's over. Close down the month. It's over in July, just like it was in June, just like it was in May, all because of a White Sox player. So we will take a break and we'll come back with all that professional radio tease, which kind of really sucked, as that last segment did. But this is Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. And we're working overtime on a holiday weekend because we're givers, not takers. We're pleasers, not teasers. Right, Mark?
That's right.
That's us.
That's right, yeah. Steve. That's right. Always.
That's
always.
Yeah. Right. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Center field.
He can't
see it. Can't find it. It's down. Berger drops it into right field. And Jake Berger, on a ball that got lost in the lights, that Cameron needed a compass for, Berger has his first major league hit in Detroit on a ball that just disappeared in the lights, and he ends up at second base.
That was a moment. He would have another hit, that Jake Berger guy. The White Sox just keep calling up players. They just keep producing injury after injury to what you thought was a World Series core, and it turns out that core just keeps getting bigger. And the old adage, actually I heard it my first round of baseball beat, and Reggie Jackson said it's going to take 35 to 40 players to win a World Series, not 25. And now you're seeing examples of that. But that wasn't your normal parachute in single and a more legitimate single, a harder hit single in the later on. That was a moment that could bring, there is crying in baseball when you see that, when you know what Jake Berger went through. 3 years, I don't know, almost 3.5 years ago, Berger tore his left Achilles tendon running down to first. Spring training. Like, you just dread all that. And guess what? He did it again months after that. It's hard enough to come back from one Achilles. He's coming back from two.
Yeah.
And since everybody was saying how tough it is to come back from one, and now he's done it twice, he's walking around trying to learn to walk again and trying to go to erase the anxiety, the hate, the frustration, the PTSD from his head. So he didn't have a 2018 season. 2019, he had tendonitis, a bruised heel, an array of setbacks. These were all listed by J.R. Fegan in The Athletic. And it just seemed there was nothing. Whatever progress he made, there were three hobbles backward. And then he was playing in a collegiate pro mixed league for the normal Corn Belters, and he had no pain, and he's starting to hit, and it all sounds good, and he talked Chris Getz of the White Sox into a gig at the alternate site. And so to fast forward, when Yoan Moncada got hurt, they needed somebody. They called Jake Berger, and Jake Berger, family in front of him, went 2-for-4 in his debut. And as wonderful as that was, when you know the backdrop, this post-game interview with just an exquisite example of minimal questioning by Jason Benetti and the answers given by Jake Berger on NBC Sports Chicago yielded this.
Jake, why are you so emotional about this?
You know, the last 3 years, I definitely thought about quitting multiple times. You know, it's just it means a lot to me and my family's here, and you know, it means more to them. And I'm happy I could do this for them, and it's just you know, I can't put words at it. I mean, I can't even speak.
Why didn't you quit?
My parents told me, you know what, don't regret anything in life. And if you quit, you're going to regret it. So, you know, keep on keeping on, keep pushing. And, you know, ultimately things are going to turn. I mean, sure enough, they were right. I never would imagine this would be what it is. But, you know, they were right.
I love that.
Well, what's really cool about it, too, is even if Jake Berger never played another game in MLB after that, and he will play another game in MLB today, but just to have had that moment coming back from what he did is amazing, because quite frankly, Jake Berger became not a joke, but it felt like that because of the severe injuries and this guy who was drafted highly by the Sox and like never thought you would see him. It just like every time there was Jake Berger news, it was a horrible injury. And to make it the way he did is pretty amazing. And I, for one, am very glad that he ended up getting that hit in the ninth inning, the little liner to right field. And that, because I like, of course it was a hit, the first one in the seventh inning, but Daz of the Camerons, uh-huh, lost that ball in the lights, and it just didn't feel legit. You know what I mean? It was legit, but it didn't feel legit. So to get the hit in the ninth inning, that felt pretty cool. And he scored a run too.
Yeah, yeah. That's he had himself a ball game, and it was in. You had Jake Berger, Gavin Sheets, and Andrew Vaughn ignite late. Three kids from the Sox were doing what veterans from the Cubs could not do. Again, there's such a stark contrast by what happened last night and what the culmination was. The Sox, organizationally, they call up guys, the guys produce. And you're talking about hitting right-handed hit pitching for Andrew Vaughn. And if Sheets is that, Sheets is that. Chris Kampka came up with a stat about Gavin Sheets, the first player in White Sox history with a hit and RBI in each of his four career major league games. He's the first with an extra base hit in each of his first four career major league games. And that's just, they're producing is what they're doing. That farm system, the organization is bringing guys up and bringing guys up, and they're producing, and you have every reason to believe this is a year of sustained success. And it was just a terrific. They're joining all his friends. Jake Berger joining all his friends. But I got a kick out of it. Jake Berger was on Inside the Clubhouse. We'll replay that later on. He was on with David Haw and Bruce Levine. And as they discussed one of the side notes to Jake Berger joining the White Sox, as a kid, he's a St. Louis kid. So as a St. Louis kid, he was at Game 6 of the 2011 World Series, which ended up being Tony La Russa's last title. Now, Tony La Russa is putting his name on the lineup card.
It's 2011. You're a kid growing up in St. Louis. You're at the World Series Game 6. Tony La Russa is the manager of that Cardinals team. Tony La Russa, the Hall of Famer. And now he's the guy putting your name in the lineup card. When you walked into the clubhouse last night, when you were in the dugout, did you have a pinch me, is this real moment when you looked over and you saw Tony La Russa as your manager?
Yeah, I mean, that was special. It was really cool to have that experience with him. And I still haven't talked to him about Game 6, but I'm going to at some point. But, you know, at this point, we're focused on winning games for the White Sox. So, you know, that it makes it simple just doing that.
That's Jake Berger on Inside the Clubhouse earlier. But here's something else to that. He's now teammates with the guy who pitched the eighth inning of that clincher, Lance Lynn. So Jake Berger could tell Lance Lynn he used to watch him pitch when he was a kid. He could walk up to him and do that.
And Lance Lynn seems like the type of guy who, if you said that to him, he'd just stare you down and maybe punch you. Maybe punch you in the shoulder, like a good shoulder hack.
Yeah.
Weird game for Lynn, huh? Like, well, good, but he walked five guys last night.
Right.
But he kept getting out of the trouble.
And I think it was a good grinding game. I mean, he's the reason they had the chance that all the kids could do something late. He's the reason they could bust out. I mean, the six runs after, you know, he pitched seven innings that were terrific. And then you look watching Sheets and Vaughn and Berger hit, score, whatever they're going to contribute. You watch that because Lance Lynn threw 117 pitches. And that's what I said. That is the point. He was asked the question afterwards, and this is why the quote of the month for July is over. So he throws 117 pitches, and he's asked how he knows he's up. He's up to the task of throwing 117 pitches. I'm a big bastard. That's how I know. That's what he said. Now, let's recall.
I hadn't heard that.
Yes, let's recall. In June, he won the quote of the month title because he was asked if the series against the powerful Rays was a challenge. And his answer, it's June. No one gives a bleep. Yeah. Okay, that works. That stuck with me. And we go back to May, and we remember Tony La Russa's, you know, absolute idiotic, you know, respect for the game crap. And the discussion again of the horrifyingly stupid unwritten rules. And Lynn gets asked about it. And when Williams' studio was pitching and Mercedes hit the 3-0 pitch and unwritten rules, and Lynn says, if a position player is on the mound, there are no rules. Let's get the damn game over with. And if you have a problem with whatever happened, then put a pitcher out there. Lance Lynn wins every month. He wins.
Spot on, man.
Yeah.
Maybe the most important play of the entire game, though, was Mr. Vaughn. Like, a legit, terrific diving catch in the seventh inning with a man on set. I believe it was a 2-1 game at that time. And it was a terrific catch. And Vaughn, like, we haven't had to talk about him much as far as his defense is concerned because it's been good enough throughout the whole year. So I don't know if that's where he is ultimately, but he's been fine.
Yes, and better than fine. And actually, Tony La Russa said that early. He said he's caught on to this a lot quicker and he's a lot better than you might think. And that's turned out to be true. And it was a terrific catch. That he's just again. The White Sox are producing. The system is producing players who can play baseball.
Give me Vaughn. League level.
Yeah. Give me Vaughn. There we go. You know what we're going to do? We're going to give you Fat. We're going to give you Rick Camp next, part of the I'm Fat podcast, celebrating their 100th podcast, he and Jay Zawoski. Rick just sent us, he texted us a picture of the greatness of their hamburger at Fredo's in Schaumburg, Frato apostrophe S. This is an unbelievable hamburger, and guess what? It comes in a pizza, too. So we'll talk about that, and we'll find out what the I'm Fat podcast thinks about competitive eating, because this is the weekend of the hot dog eating contest on Coney Island, and we will discuss that with Rick, because it's a weekend of gluttony, grilled gluttony, most likely. And we're going to start with the gluttony that is pictured on my text string now, thanks to Rick Camp and the I'm Fat podcast. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mark Grody, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Yeah, those 117 pitch outings, obviously you can't do them every time out or probably don't want to, but how do you know that you're able to do that?
I'm a big bastard. That's how I know.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.